We wouldn't be able to keep this archive going without your support. Donate online today at WYXR.org.
The community station that's raised by sound.
Welcome once again to the Becker Mound Radio Hour. We're coming to you tonight from the historic Ellis Theater in downtown Philadelphia, Mississippi.
When you're feeling way down low, got no place to go, can't call a lover, can't find no friend, can't call your soul and soul, put your hand on the radio. Can you feel it down to your toes? Can you feel it? That's how it goes. Can you feel it?
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Welcome to the Thacker Mountain Radio Hour. As I mentioned, we're at the historic Ellis Theater right down here in downtown Philadelphia, Mississippi, at the Congress of Country Music, a place where you could round the corner and Hank Williams will be staring you right in the face. A beautiful cutout looks just like him. Marty Stewart has a beautiful museum planned for this building and this corner of Philadelphia. So what a great thing is going to be built here. We're delighted to be a part of it tonight. Big show for y'all tonight. We got some R&B, a man that can really play the blues on the guitar. Vasti Jackson is here, y'all. Yes, yes, yes. Ooh, he's so good. Just got back from Europe playing, of all things, Ike Turner in a review about Tina Turner. Boy, wouldn't you love to see that. Also, Wyatt Ellis is here. Wyatt Ellis, 15-year-old bluegrass phenom. And our author tonight, as we mentioned, from Meridian, Mississippi, writing a book about 1980s Meridian. And boy, was it a racy town. The Queen City Detective Agency, Snowden Wright is here, y'all. Snowden Wright. But we appreciate this crowd. We got a beautiful crowd, beautiful building here. I wish the folks on the radio could see it. But we got a fine house band here. Y'all, please bring them to the stage, the Yellow Bushwhackers, boys.
The detectives.
is here for a visit. They call it injustice when it's past the legal limit. Someone's snatching at the window, I wonder who is it. The detectives come to check if you belong to the parents. I thought they heard the worst about the dollar's disappearance. So it took me a miracle to get you to stay. It only took my little fingers to blow you away. Just like watching the detectives don't get cute. Just like watching the detectives, you get so angry when the teardrops start. You can't be wounded cause it's got no heart. It's just like watching the detectives. Just like watching the detectives. No, no, no. I'm watching the detectives. It's just like watching the detectives. It's just like watching the detectives.
Thank you all. How about the Yellow Bushwhackers, y'all? We love them. Ricky Burkhead, Slade Lewis, Keon Love, and Paul Tate up front, our band leader and arranger. Our first guest tonight, y'all, is Vasti Jackson. If you're not familiar with Vasti, you sure need to be. He is a veteran of the Mississippi blues scene, and for the last, I would say, 10 or 15 years, been huge over in Europe, although he really has. People say that, but he really has. Big in Sweden, France, Spain, across the pond. But yet keeps his roots down in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and they love him in New Orleans, as you might imagine. And I bet we love him in Philadelphia, Mississippi. Y'all, please welcome Vasti Jackson.
Everybody. My name is Vasti Jackson, just like the man said, and tonight, I said tonight, oh tonight, we gonna set this thing on fire. Get a thrill you can feel. Mississippi better, baby, light your fire, my desire. Well, my flames burn so bright, you see the glow light of the night. Thank you. you get a thrill you can feel. Mississippi Burnaby, let your fire my desire. Well, my face burns so bright, you see the glow light of the night. So glad to be back in Philadelphia, Mississippi, in this beautiful Ellis Theater. Now, that song is called Mississippi Burner, and I had the privilege of doing that song in a musical that I was doing in Europe from 2017 to 2023 called Simply the Best, the Tina Turner Story, and I played Ike. Anna May, you better eat that cake. Well, this next song I'm going to do is from a project that we did for Stars Encore Cable called Last of the Mississippi Jukes. Did anybody see the documentary with Morgan Freeman? Well, I wrote the song for that. We actually filmed this in the subway lounge in Jackson, Mississippi. Let's see. So this hurricane season, can't you feel it? Can't you feel it in the wind? Shh. So this hurricane season, can't you feel it? Can't you feel it in the wind? Well, you better come on inside before the rains begin. Said my grandma, she tell me that's time you better put that old guitar down, 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 down. Said my grandma, she tell me that's time you better put that old guitar down. She said one day lightning gonna strike them strings, son, and you never play another sound. I said, Grandma, since I'm in Philadelphia, Mississippi, at the Ellis Theater, I'm gonna have to play some guitar. Thank you. it's hurricane season. Woo! Can't you feel it? 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 The wind. Now listen, they got me up in this theater with 14 minutes. Now let me tell you something. That's what we call a contradiction of the blues. But that's all I can do tonight. So if you want more, you got to ask them to bring me back. Because I got lots more. Now how about a round of applause for the Yala Bushwhackers? Did I get it right?
Yes, sir.
All right. So now, this is another song that I did for the Queen of the Blues, and that's Miss Coco Taylor. You remember that, ain't nothing but a hound dog, all that stuff. Anyway, I wrote a song for her. How much time I got, man? 5 minutes, that's good. We can conquer the world in 5 minutes. Yeah. So, I'm gonna get a little taste of it. I wanna stop talking about it. Everybody wanna have a good time. Well, don't you give me no whiskey, so don't you give me no wine. Jimmy Duck Home, that stuff will make you drunk. It'll make you wink. Man, when I get intoxicated, y'all, I can't think. Bring me a blues boogie with a shuffle beat. So that's the only thing, y'all, that'll give me happy feet. So let the truth join and jump. Clap your hands, shake your rump. Come on, y'all. Jump. Said I walked through the door, the joint was jumping, the drummer was kicking, the bass man was thumping, dancers on the floor, they were having a ball, juking so hard, y'all. Just begin to fall. So I grab my guitar, I begin to sting, and that's when the crowd, they begin to sting. Say, let the juke join, jump, clap your hand, shake your arm. The juke jump on jump. Thank you. before I have to go home.
Jackson, y'all, one more time for him, please. Vasti Jackson, Royal American Blues is his latest album. Man, bless him. And also two Grammy nominations, one of which was for his album about Jimmy Rogers, y'all's neighbor right down the road there, and also one he co-produced with the great Bobby Rush. So how about Vasti Jackson, y'all? He mentioned us having him back, but that's just not going to happen, because Vasti phones it in. He just doesn't give it enough oomph, you know? So, sorry, Vasti, maybe next time. Boy, how about that guy? How about him, man? He's got it. Yeah. Saves a lot of money on coffee, ladies and gentlemen. He don't need none. Thank y'all for being here. We are coming to you. You're listening to the Thacker Mountain Radio Hour. You're hearing us on the stations of Mississippi Public Broadcasting, also the stations of Alabama Public Radio, WYXR in Memphis, Tennessee, WUTC in Chattanooga, Tennessee, WUOT in Knoxville, Tennessee, and KNCE Taos, New Mexico, ladies and gentlemen. True Taos Radio, yes. We love them. They love the blues out there. I think that's one reason they've booked our show. Also, we'd like to thank our sponsors, if you don't mind. The beautiful Ellis Theater. How about this Ellis Theater and Marty Stewart's Congress of Country Music. We appreciate them so much. Red Panther Brewery. Also, Catherine Etheridge Family Foundation. Larry and Michael Johnson Family Foundation. Dr. Stephen and Gay Case. The Mississippi Arts Commission. R&B Fader. Charitable Foundation, excuse me, Square Books, our fine bookstore up in Oxford. And speaking of Oxford, visit Oxford, our great tourism group up there, and the Yacht and Potapa Arts Council. You too can be a Thacker backer, y'all. There's more information how you can keep this wonderful show going another 28-something years, ThackerMountain.org. Keon Love, man. Keon. Thank y'all. Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right. We mentioned that Meridian, Mississippi, is right down the road. What is it, 40 minutes away? How far away? More like an hour? Yeah. And, of course, Snowden will never be invited back after this book. No, I'm kidding. It is a crime novel. It's a thriller, and it's a whodunit. We've just got to come out and say it. You don't know really who done it until the very end, and that's how you want it to unfold for you. Previous novel was called American Pop, fine novel. And before that, in another life, and we'll talk about it, Snowden was actually a reader for Esquire, The New Yorker, and The Paris Review. So he knows his stuff. Y'all please welcome Snowden Wright. We were talking before the show, and I mentioned there's a lot of police jargon, like almost insider kind of police talk, which we all love. And I thought, boy, did Snowden like ride with police at night, you know, and interview him? But you were closer to the bone. Tell me how you know so much police stuff.
I actually rode with police in a sort of way every time I went to Little League. My father was the district attorney in my hometown back in the 1980s. And this story was actually inspired by a case he tried in the 80s. A woman hired a Dixie Mafia hitman to kill her husband for the insurance money, as you do. And the conduit for this hit was an illustrious criminal by the name of Peanut Griffin. Peanut was cooling his heels in the Lauderdale County Jail until he decided to break out, only to then realize that the Lauderdale County Jail was located on the roof of the Lauderdale County Courthouse. So Peanut was up there in a tank top and one sock with nowhere to run. And he was hooting and hollering and claiming that he would kill not only my father, not only my pregnant mother, but also me. I was 2 years old at the time. And the thing is, you never forget your first death threat.
We're laughing. You were 2 years old. Your sibling, your brother or sister, was not even born yet.
I brag about having survived my first death threat when I was two. My sister brags about having survived hers before she was even born.
Wow. So, and your dad, district attorney during those years, you talk a lot about in this novel, the Dixie Mafia. And we've all sort of heard about that. I don't know, is it urban legend? Was there really such a thing? I'll ask you, was there really such a thing as the Dixie Mafia?
There really was. And it played a key role in the community of Meridian, especially back in the 1980s. The stories I would hear over at the dinner table from my father and his friends made my hometown sound like the Wild West. There was even one occasion, there was a dive bar in Meridian by the name of the John Wesley Hardin Club. So this dive bar was named after the deadliest gunfighter in the Old West. And the one time my father claims to have patronized this venue, he was walking in and the woman worked at the door. She stops him. She goes, "Sir, are you armed?" And my father was indignant at the very notion. He goes, "No, ma'am, I am not." She reaches into a drawer, pulls out a handgun, gives it to him, and says, "You can borrow this one, honey. I think you could use it."
I mean, this is actual real life. You put that in a novel, that your editor might say, "Come on." But she actually let him borrow her gun.
That was real life. And another story that really inspired me to imbue this novel with tropes of the Western genre. Back when Peanut was on the roof threatening to kill me and my unborn sister and my mother and my father, my father decided to go out there and confront Peanut. He was being backed up by his investigator, an ex-cop who was armed. And the last thing he said to this ex-cop before he confronted Peanut was, "If he moves, shoot him." For years, I just thought that was a cool thing for my dad to have said. Until I watched the movie The Wild Bunch. In that film, the first thing the protagonist says with regard to a group of bank tellers he's holding up is, "If they move, shoot them." So I go to my dad and say, "Did you realize you were quoting The Wild Bunch on the roof up there with Peanut Griffin?" And my dad goes, "Snowden, I've only seen that movie about 200 times. And I go, "But yeah, did you realize you were quoting it?" At which point my father gets very serious and he goes, "No, I just didn't want to get my ass shot."
Wow. So you heard these stories, I don't know, around the dinner table, but these were family tales for you.
They were family tales, but they continued on throughout my life. My previous two novels are historical fiction. And around 2020, I was trying to decide what I wanted my next book to be. And around that time, I received a voicemail from my mother in which she goes, "Snowden, someone tried to murder your father again. He's fine, but they haven't caught the guy. And apparently he knows where you live. So lock your doors at night. Okay, love you. Bye."
This is an actual voicemail from your mother.
This is an actual voicemail from my mother. So how could I not decide to write a crime novel for my next book? And after this assassination attempt, the police went to my dad and asked him, they said, "Sir, can you think of anyone who would want to kill you?" And without missing a beat, he goes, "I can think of three."
Right off the top of his head. We cannot have this discussion without talking about our main character, our heroine, our protagonist, if you will, Clementine Baldwin, Clem. She is in this is 80s Mississippi, a black female detective. And I would love to ask your dad or whoever was working back in those days, was there such a person? Did a black woman make it to become a private investigator, have her own detective agency?
If there weren't, there should have been. And so right. With this book, I can correct the record. I can rechange history. But with a book like this, I am writing across identity, which can be a challenge for a lot of authors. And so whenever I do that, I used to think that there were three tools an author needed. You need empathy. You have to feel empathy for your character. You need imagination. You have to be able to imagine yourself into a life not your own. And when necessary, you need research. And so with this book, my research entailed a friend who is a woman of color. And I would contact her throughout the writing of the book and ask her, "Does this sound correct? Does this sound true? What do you think?" And her answer 100% of the time was, "Yeah." That was her answer until she got fed up and she said, "Enough. People of color aren't from Mars. We're just human beings. However you think we'd act or do or say or think or feel in a certain situation is probably right. You don't even have to be a good writer to get it right. You have to have common sense. You," she said, "have common sense. Trust it." So wow. To any aspiring writers out there who are writing across identity, be it race, gender, sexuality, religion, that is my advice. Utilize empathy, imagination, research, and common sense.
There you go, man. And good luck with that common sense part. It seems to be in precious short supply. One more thing, and we want you to read just a couple of passages. There was so much stuff in here. There's so much Meridian, a lot of the landmarks we all know, great restaurants, so this club that you mentioned, I don't think many of us do know. But you had Meridian being, of course, it was a railroad town back in the day, but you had cockfights in this story.
Peanut Griffin, the real Peanut Griffin, his main career was in cockfighting. And so the first chapter, I mentioned how his secret to winning his cockfights was he would take a Q-tip, lace it with cocaine, and hold it up to the bird's nostrils. I even looked up to see if chickens do have nostrils. And when I gave the chapter to my father for fact-checking, he said, "Everything checks out, except he didn't hold the Q-tip to their nostrils. He stuck it up their buttholes." And I was like, even better.
Hey, man, 27 years on public radio. That's a first, baby. Yeah. We're leaving that in. I can tell you, listen next week. That ain't getting cut. That's pretty hilarious. But also, you get your strokes in of social commentary. You get licks in against racism and against sexism, and it really do a great job of it. And at one point you mentioned, or one of the characters mentioned, Rod Serling. When he was doing The Twilight Zone, one of the main things that inspired him to do the show was the Emmett Till murder. He tried to do a tell play based on the murder, and the CBS execs just tore it up, 50 of them reading it, change this. So he came up with the idea of sneaking in the message. You even have it in your book, like when you give a dog medicine and a wad of cheese. And you do that in this book. You sneak in really wonderful social commentary under the guise of this detective story. And I did not know about the Emmett Till and Rod Serling thing. And I got to tell you, I Googled it to check on you, and it's legit.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It was really important for me to make this not only a crime caper, but a crime caper with a message. And so a lot of the issues of racism, classism, and sexism were much more prevalent in the 80s, but sadly are still prevalent today. And so this book is the spoonful of sugar to get the medicine down, in a way.
But it is a lot of fun. It's not a bunch of messages. In fact, to prove
it's a lot of sugar.
There's a lot of sugar. It is. It's a really fun read. Great characters, great dialogue. You mentioned Westerns. It's kind of Elmore Leonard-ish. It's got, who's one of your heroes?
Elmore Leonard is, I probably read more books by him than by any other single author. And the thing about him is he is funny. And so I really tried hard to make this book funny. And if you actually look at his career, you can see how, in my theory, the Western genre evolved into what we think of as the modern crime novel. It was almost dinosaurs into birds. And his career really symbolizes that, because that's what he did. He started out writing Westerns and moved on to crime novels.
Oh, man. Well, I ate up too much of our time here, but we do have a minute to hear some, if you don't mind. Again, it is the Queen City Detective Agency, Snowden Wright, y'all.
Thank you. This is the third chapter, and we're meeting this character new, so I shouldn't need to introduce much about him. Chapter 3, Good Morning, America. It was morning again in America. On his drive through the outskirts of Slidell, Louisiana, a man who over the years had been known as Jacob Kilpatrick, Jacob Carver, Jacob Longball, Jacob Hanks, and Jacob Cassidy played a game called Good Morning, America. His daughter had invented it. After seeing, for the thousandth time, Ronald Reagan's re-election campaign ads and how it was morning again in America, Jacob's little girl, Sue June, grudgingly weaned off her bedtime addiction to Goodnight Moon, started to say those three words as both a fix and a rebuke to her dad's insistence he couldn't read her favorite picture book to her again without losing his damn mind. Sue June had loved playing the game on car rides. When she saw a clown that looked like a rooster playing a flute, she'd say, "Good morning, America." When they passed her favorite snowball stand, the one that did rainbow sprinkles at no extra charge, she'd say, "Good morning, America." This afternoon, driving alone for work, Jacob repeated the saying despite not having an audience. He passed a foreclosure sign. "Good morning, America." He passed a deer processing center. "Good morning, America." Near the twin span, glittery with broken bottles and lumpy with discarded fast food sacks, the brands of which were painted on billboards overshadowing traffic, Jacob exited the interstate and turned down a side street, Lake Pontchartrain tracking his passage from residential to commercial, commercial to industrial, industrial to mixed use, and back again. "Good morning, America." He passed the playground where Sue June had collapsed. He passed the hospital where her leukemia had been diagnosed. He passed the stoplight where he'd sobbed through the news that nothing could be done. "Good morning, America." Jacob pulled over at a payphone. He usually preferred the kind with the booth for the privacy, but he'd done enough driving this afternoon to shake any tails that might be following him. "It's me," he said after slotting his 10 cents and dialing the usual number. A man coughed on the other end. "Any heat since your last trip to Meridian?" asked Jacob's handler, his voice shagged by God knew how many packs of cigarettes. "Nada. Might be some coming soon. The MPD, said Jacob's handler, drawing out the letters derisively. "Up and decided to waste Johnny taxpayers hard-earned and run a blood test on Humpty Dumpty." "Damn. Correct. But that's not why we needed to talk. The mother hired a PI, some ex-cop who's meddled in the organization's affairs before." "Like how?" "Unimportant. Main thing, it's been decided she can't be allowed any meddling again."
"She?"
Jacob's handler laughed. "Buddy, old pal, That ain't even the half of it. After getting details on the job, Jacob took a route home, even longer than his route to the payphone had been, all while keeping eyes on his rear view. He tried to distract himself from the disaster that had been the Hubbard job, including his cleanup, by changing the radio station. It helped as little as the goofballs his doctor at the VA gave him for his stress flashbacks. Outside the city limits, he passed a newly built retail park with a liquor store named Liquor Store and a tanning salon named Tanning Salon. Jacob didn't know what the hell was going on with the world. A few years ago, this area had been considered the backwoods. Now it was a riot of commerce. The world had begun one thing after the other. The Tet Offensive in 68, Camille in 69, the boundless line of yayo that was the 70s, and now the 80s. A boom time, the TV said, but not boom enough for a new carburetor, or repairs on the plumbing, or a child's health insurance. Thank you.
Thank you. Snowden Wright, y'all. Thank you, man.
Very true.
The Queen City Detective Agency. It is from William Morrow. And Snowden will join us out in the lobby. We've got a table set up and some books, absolutely. And he will sign copies and visit with folks. And, boy, it is a great read. He really makes Meridian seem like a lively place back in those years. I bet it was. Also want to mention, I missed one of his books aside from American Pop. He also has Play Pretty Blues. That was that's what really got him going. The Wall Street Journal said of this book, a fun saga stuffed with colorful characters, burst of violence, droll banter, and many twists. Wall Street Journal, man, they know they should know about twists, right? Really fun read. We appreciate Snowden being on the show. All right, Wyatt Ellis, man, you've been down here in Philadelphia, Mississippi before. I believe y'all been on this very stage before. Yeah. A homecoming. Good old Marty Stewart, as you know, his quote on Wyatt is, Wyatt has the goods, and what separates Wyatt from so many great players is that he can write songs. And as Marty pointed out, we need more good bluegrass songs as the younger bluegrass players are coming up, and Wyatt is delivering those goods. And tonight, he's going to deliver it right here in Philadelphia, Mississippi. Y'all please welcome Wyatt Ellis.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm good honky tonkin', everything's turned upside down. But when I find that gal of mine, we're really gonna paint this town. Kentucky, with waving long black hair and lips as sweet as warm red wine, no others can compare. I'm going honky tonkin', everything's turned upside down. But when I find that gal of mine, we're really gonna paint this town. This town. make this town. Oh, thank y'all so much. How y'all doing tonight? Right now, I'm gonna do one of my favorite songs that I heard one of my biggest heroes, Marty Stewart, do on this stage just about a few years ago, and it's called The Orange Blossom Special. Bringing my baby back. Thank y'all so much. Thank you. This is a tune that I wrote just looking over the Great Smoky Mountains, and it's on my last record, Happy Valley, and it featured a very special guest, and that was Marty. And we're gonna play it for y'all right now. It's called Blue Smoke. Thank you.
y'all. That's Gibson Davis on the banjo, Alex Leach on the guitar, Noah Goble on the fiddle, and Jed Clark on the bass. We'll see you again in a few. Thank you.
Wyatt Ellis, y'all. One more time for him. Let him hear it. Great band, great players. Wyatt Ellis. Maybe go back there and grab a beverage. Boy, back in the old days when it was a movie theater, you could only dream of Maker's Mark, right? It was juicy mints and all that stuff that sticks to your feet. Now they got a full bar. It's very nice. That's what I call progress, Philadelphia, Mississippi. Y'all got it going on. One more time for all our guests, if you don't mind. Vashti Jackson, the powerhouse. Snowden Wright, y'all. The pride of Meridian, Mississippi. The Queen City Detective Agency. Snowden will join us after the show. One more time from Wyatt Ellis, if you don't mind. Wyatt Ellis, he'll be right back here. Man, we've had a big time. What a beautiful, wonderful facility this is. Y'all are so lucky to have it, and we look forward to coming back. And we will also remind you that we'll be kicking off our fall season, if you find yourself up in Oxford, Mississippi. Every Thursday night at 6 p.m., we record the show at the Powerhouse Arts Center right there on the square in Oxford. Love for you to come see us up there in person, but we were delighted to bring the show down here to y'all, and we hope to do it again soon. In the meantime, we'll see you on the radio, boys.
Well, I was standing on the corner when this pretty chick walked by. She paused by the lamppost, she was giving me an eye. Walked slowly to her, whispered real polite. Me and you together, rock and roll all night. And when rock and roll we did, she was a rock and roll a kid. I played it cool, I played it smart. I didn't know she'd break my heart. I took her to the corner right to my 88. We had a lot of miles to cover, the hour was getting late. She handed me a bottle, I took a little snort. She said, go ahead and kill it, baby, I got another quart. And we rock and roll, we did. She was a rock and rolling kid. I played it cool, I played it smart. I didn't know she'd break my heart. I took her to my apartment, put some coffee on the brew. Put on some record player, the other clock strike two. That's when that new Sydney cut me like a knife. She was a private detective working for my wife. We didn't run and roll no more. There was a loud knock at my door. They stood my wife with the cops galore. I tried to crawl on the floor.
Thacker Mountain Radio Hour's executive director is Lucy Gaines. Our production director is Tim Lee. Our broadcast and post-production engineer is Jeffrey Reed. Our front of house engineer is Blake Gardner.
Satisfied.